This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Breakfast Grill. The president of the latest Malay political party Pejuang, MP of Jelun, ex-Menteri Besar of Kedah and having a surname so synonymous with Malaysian politics. Welcome, Dato' Sri Mukesh Mahathir. Now, Dato' Sri, you're relatively late entrance to politics, running for your elections only in 2008 after Tun Mahathir's first term as Prime Minister. The only one among seven siblings that has followed your father's footsteps into politics. Was there a calling or maybe was it an expectation?
I suppose it was a calling for me, actually, because I was involved in several NGOs, particularly in Ansara, which is the alumni for MRCM students. We were rather active working for humanitarian work and stuff like that. And I saw what my father was doing as a politician, but of course, at the highest levels of power, being Prime Minister and all that, president of the largest party. And I thought it was something interesting, but I knew at the same time that he was not keen on having any of our family members involved in party politics while he was still in position.
But you know, Malaysian politics is dotted with family dynasties, right? We have the Lim family in DAP, the Razak name in UMNO, and even Datuk Hishamuddin Hussein comes from a long line of politicians, including a grandfather that founded UMNO. But I'm curious, names open doors, but does it weigh heavily at the same time?
It definitely opens doors, but after that, you have to do things on your own. People have pretty high expectations because of that name. So those are pretty big shoes to fill. And I try as best as I can to do what is almost expected of me, but at the same time do my own stuff also. So I think while it helps to get things going, but after that, you have to prove your own mettle.
Okay, we're going to find out what gets you going. What are your own causes that you want to champion in a few minutes? But you know, Tun Mahathir is larger than life. And even in your sister's recent book, she wrote The Apple and the Tree. I think your sister Marina Mahathir ends chapter two by writing, or perhaps it is the legacy of living under so large a shadow of dad's. Do you share the same sentiment?
Yes, I believe so. The issue for me probably would be that people expect me to be a Mahathir 2.0, which I think it's not going to be so easy to do. So I'd rather have my own thing going, my own thoughts. Of course, we are guided by his ideas and the way of thinking, which I think is nothing faulty with that. But at the same time, perhaps we could innovate considering the times and the changes that we've seen in the recent past.
So what is Dato' Sri Mukesh Mahathir 1.0 then? What do you stand for? What are the causes you champion?
First of all, of course, we've seen how it's troublesome if you don't hold strongly to integrity in the way things should be governed. And that's that wasn't such a problem before, but of course, it was there, but now it's become so pervasive that every single thing that we are doing relates to that somehow. I mean, the recent floods is another indicator. So that's one thing that I'd really like to champion, to bring proper governance to the way we run things in the country. Secondly, I look towards the future. I still believe that Malaysia has got such potential that's unmet. We have great people, we have great brains, you know, we have hardworking people actually that are excelling not only in the country but globally. And yet we have not given them the opportunity, the conducive environment for them to thrive. So I believe that Malaysia should really be placed in the map again and not let others basically take over from where we were before. And I think we can still grow into a great economy that benefits all its rakyat.
But Dato Sri, you know, some critics will say that maybe what you're trying to do is, you know, when you talk about governance, some of the reason why the governance levels are where they are, some of it started during your father's term in office, you know, during that long reign of 22 years. Are you undoing some, maybe some of the mistakes that happened along the way?
I wouldn't call them mistakes. The way I see it, he had a vision of how things should be done. When there were not any counter arguments to show him that there are other ideas that are better than his, then he keeps with his own. But the only thing we've seen so far always has been in the implementation of things. I think in his recent book, he explains also that it's okay to have a vision and to have it implemented by the civil service, but at the same time, you need to explain why things need to be done that way. So if people don't have a sense of ownership over what it is that the country needs to do, then sometimes the implementation goes awry and you don't get the results that you want. So I think it's important that we communicate what that vision is and explain or dwell into the nitty-gritty details about how to get it done.
And this time round, if you were in charge, it would be a very different kind of government. Would it be empowered to act? There would be proper governance and the separation between judiciary, civil service and legislature?
We need that kind of check and balance, not the type of check and balance we supposedly have right now.
And I want to talk about Pejuang as a party. You're the president. Now tell us about it, because it's a breakaway party from Bersatu, which itself was a breakaway party from UMNO. But what's the traction? So how many members have signed up, and is there a demographic to the member?
I won't dwell into the numbers just yet, because we are still a rather new party. The demographics, I think we are promoting it in states that are not particularly Malay. So far, this response has been very good in states like Kedah, Selangor, Johor, and interestingly, Sabah. In the other states, it's picking up. I think the difference between us and UMNO and Satu is that whilst we are also catering to the Malay market, but at the same time, I think we, from when we were still in Bersatu as well, we were pretty much pushing for good governance. And we believe that there are Malay leadership that can fulfill that requirement. But unfortunately, it didn't happen in UMNO. And later it became apparent it also did not happen in Bersatu. So although we are a breakaway, actually we were expelled from both parties because of being consistent. We may be different, but we have been consistent in our championing of integrity from the UMNO days.
When I look at some of what Tun Mahathir has been saying very recently about Pejuang, right? He said that it's a party that will champion Malay rights with an objective of making Malaysia a developed country by 2030 or even earlier. So I'm curious, and now you tell me that you're trying to make headways in states which aren't particularly very Malay. Is there a mismatch here?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that there is no other political party that is challenging UMNO at their own bastions, that at their, you know, hardcore support, you know, states. Yeah.
So doesn't Bersatu give them a run for their money?
No, I don't think Bersatu will get anywhere. I'm sorry to say, because they are neither here nor there.
And you can make that headway?
Yes, I think so. We are getting a lot of response, good response, very positive response from the people. Because if you look at Malacca, for example, there is a number of people who felt rather disenchanted by how politics has been going so far, and they've not come out to vote. They used to be strong supporters of UMNO, now feeling very betrayed by them. They don't see Bersatu or Perikatan Nasional as a good alternative, but somehow they still can't get themselves to vote for PH. So they need to go somewhere. And at this moment, they are not thinking of going anywhere. So they want to stay on the fence. In fact, there's talk about not coming out to vote, right?
But at the same time, right, we have seen two political parties, Warisan and Muda, make a very clear effort to appeal to middle Malaysia. So politics that shifts away from the narrative of race or religion and appealing to all Malaysians. Now, after 65 years of independence, you know, isn't Malaysia for Malaysians? So why is Pejuang still championing a very Malay-centric agenda?
No, I really wished we could be a multiracial party, but as of now, when we see that the main challenger would be UMNO, someone needs to go after them and expose them for all the wrongdoings that they've committed these past few years. And I can't depend on PAS. I don't think they are getting anywhere. They have a different positioning outright compared to, say, UMNO. So someone has to go after them. And it's a big number of seats in the rural Malay constituencies. I think Pejuang is the only one that is challenging them there.
And how are you going to prove that you're the party that stands for integrity, right? I want to be honest here, Dato' Sri. Like I say, you're a breakaway from Bersatu, which is a breakaway from UMNO. So how are you going to convince people that, hey, this is a totally different party? Maybe the mistakes of the past, we won't repeat them. I mean, how are you going to convince Malaysian voters this?
Well, I think it's all about principles. If you look at why things have happened to us, we are now only 4 MPs. You know, we used to be 13 and before that. But the thing about it is that we have always stuck to our principles. If you look at our narrative from the day we were expelled from UMNO to the day we formed Bersatu and then we got betrayed by Bersatu, everything is the same, actually. Why? Because we've never agreed to cooperate with the likes of Najib Razak. We will never get in bed with the kleptocrats. And we want a Malaysia that is deserving of a good leadership. And so, although you say that we are breakaway parties, but actually we have been consistent in the way we conduct ourselves. So I think that's the point of that message needs to get across to the people about who we really are.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dato' Sri Mukris Mahathir, President of Pejuang. When we come back, his views on trade and does the NEP need a reset? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Dato' Sri Mukris Mahathir. Just before the break, we were talking about family legacy. Dato' Sri, you recently gave Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri's government an F for their first 100 days in government. I mean, it's a rather scathing rating for some of your ex-colleagues because you were in government together. So where do you think Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri's government is going very wrong? Is it the handling of the economy, the floods, or just the management of the pandemic?
First of all, I should say that he was trying to measure what success they had achieved within 100 days. You know that the last elections was more than 100 days ago. You know, it was 2018. You know, two governments had come before his. You know, so what can you do in 100 days that was not started by first the PH government and then the Perikatan National government, which he inherited? Well, I wouldn't say inherited. There was a power grab. So that's one thing. So I don't think there's anything you can really show in 100 days, and he gave a rating of 90%. How do you actually measure that based on what, you know? This government that we have right now did not come about by way of a manifesto, for example. There was no such thing. Perikatan National didn't have one either. There were no promises made, so you can't measure based on what was promised. Unlike PH, right? There were criticisms about how we fell short, but we were only given 22 months. The recent floods also is a major indicator of how badly this government is managing things. They don't seem to get their act together, despite the fact that these were people who have been in government before. It's not like they've not had any experience doing this.
I do also notice that Pujang didn't sign the MOU with the government. Why?
We feel that we need to be totally independent, to be free to convey our thoughts in parliament. And we felt that if there was any form of reward from the government, then it might diminish our ability to be critical of the government when they needed to be criticised.
But you were invited to sign it? Because I understand some parties were excluded. They weren't even asked.
Yes, yes. I was asked to meet with the Prime Minister. I went to see him. Mm. And he asked me about the MOU, whether our four from Pujang would sign it. I said that we would not. At the time, he was worried about the 12th Malaysia plan, whether we would oppose it. And I said, why would we oppose it? I mean, it was okay. I mean, it's a five-year plan. The least we could do was to abstain. And we did not. The plan was passed. So I told him he didn't have anything to worry about that one. But we remain free or independent to criticize any parts of it. And we surely did that.
No, so let's spend some time on the economy since you mentioned the 12 Malaysia plan. Interestingly, you're not keen that Malaysia joins the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, otherwise known as CPTPP. But Dato Sri, you were Deputy Minister of International Trade and Industry when the CPTPP was first negotiated, right? So why your hesitation now for us, Malaysia, to ratify this treaty?
In our case, CPTPP, the MITI minister says that there is still a cost-benefit analysis being done. But the way he's talking, it sounds like he's about to ratify it already. We still have not heard what the analysis has said, how it is beneficial for the country to sign this. It opens markets for Malaysia in Peru. I mean, how many companies, what products are we exporting to Peru? I mean, what happens in our own market, that's where I'm very worried.
Is this related to the Bumi agenda, though? The protectionism that still exists within the NEP? Because you've highlighted that as one reason, right? But the NEP has just passed its 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Policies, if you ask me, should evolve with time. And the debate here, I don't think, is that it should be eradicated, but a reset of NEP. Because if it hasn't achieved its goals after 50 years, so what do you think, Dato Sri? Is that the only valid reason why we shouldn't, like, let's say, ratify agreements like this?
I think CPTPP in general is bad for the country. It's not just for Puan Putras. I brought it up because we are Pejuang is a Malay party. But if you look at some other analysis made by others, they also say that everyone's going to be impacted by it, most particularly the government. Because if you look at some of the countries that have signed the CPTPP, almost the very next day, they were sued by companies that felt that their interests were put to risk or reduced because of some new government policy. So we have to be very careful about that because we don't want to expose ourselves to those kinds of suits thrown at us by companies.
So you don't think it sends a strong signal to the international community that Malaysia is ready to be a competitive player in the region and the world and comply with what are known as international standards and provide this robust institutional framework?
I have absolutely no problems with free trade agreements, but they have to be free. I mean, that's the whole idea, is to reduce tariffs in the other markets so that our exports can access them. But if you look at CPTPP, it's hardly free. It basically shackles us to a certain number of conditions that make it onerous for us to comply.
Okay, and what about NEP, Dato Sri? I mean, if we had to reset it, do you think it needs a reset? And I mean, what is your vision
definitely.
Of it? I mean, would it be different from what it is now? In fact, there's more noise about equity ownership, for example. Is that the right approach? Should we not look at needs-based economic policies?
Yes, NEP was supposed to be needs-based. The needs being for anyone who was poor. And then it just happened that they're more Malay poor than the others. So that was why there was an affirmative action policy in place, which was the NEP. But I do agree that the implementation did not meet the objectives, and there were certain side effects like the subsidy mentality, which was not the intent of the policy. And we fear that this kind of mentality starts to become culture. It starts to permeate. And it did help that the Najib government was giving out brim, bram, room, all kinds of One Malaysia-related gifts, right? Which basically made people more more susceptible to those kinds of gula-gula, we call it.
Mm.
So any kind of policy from the government should create opportunities, but these opportunities need to be earned. They need to be made use of properly. And it cannot be depended on forever. Yeah, it has to be, there needs to be an expiry date. So after which you are on your own. So we can't continue doing this without end.
BFM 89.9 on a special extended breakfast grill this morning is Datuk Sri Mukris Mahathir, president of the political party Pejuang. After the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, there are chances at GE15, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to a special extended breakfast grill with Datuk Sri Mukris Mahathir, President of Pejuang. Just before the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, his dissenting views on the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, which he actually helped draft. Now, Datuk Sri, the rumblings on the ground is that GE15 will be in 2022. Some people say maybe first half, others say second half. But is Pejuang ready? And what is your guess in terms of timeline? Or maybe you do know.
My guess, I do not. My guess would be if the MOU that PH signed still carries, so it'll be from July onwards, right? But it's not. I'm not saying that it won't happen any sooner than that.
Hmm.
But my guess would be later than July. Still, that's not much time.
Yeah.
That's only about 7 months away. And we are ready. I wouldn't say we are as ready as some of the bigger and older political parties. But then I'm still very optimistic that the Rakyat will carry the day. They made the right decision in 2018. And I believe strongly that they will still make the right decision in the next elections. And I hope that right decision that they make involves Pejuang.
But recent state elections don't point to that, right? Because we've had the outcome of Malacca. I think Sarawak was a given, but Sabah, for example. So I don't know whether that outcome will really be the case in GE15. I mean, what makes you so sure this time round Pejuang can make headway?
It's been proven time and again that by-elections and state elections are not really good indicators of how a GE would turn out. And then the other thing that I think everyone is concerned except BN is that the voter turnout was rather low in Malacca.
So what will Pejuang run on? I mean, what are the campaign messaging that you will focus on? And, you know, I'm curious also, like, how many MPs will you field? And I'll ask the question later on about coalition partners. But, you know, those two thoughts, firstly, Datuk Sri, what are the causes you want to champion? What is the messaging and the number of MPs?
We want to champion a successful Malaysia. We feel that the country has all the potential to be successful, we are close to becoming a bit banana republic, I mean, according to even some foreign press, you know, and you can list down all the reasons for that. I believe that we need to recover the country from the grasp of those who should not be in government, who have been clearly making use of power, not in the best interests of the people, but for their own interests. And we need to get going because, as I said, for example, in technology, I believe that so many of our own people have the right innovations to do good for the whole world. Mm. But unfortunately, things are not going well in the country, and we are stuck in this quagmire of political maneuverings. And this is not good for anyone.
How many MPs will you field, though?
We are contesting in Pejuang itself around 120.
That's half of the seats available.
There's a reason for that, because we looked at why Bersatu did not win as many as we had hoped, despite contesting 52 seats in the last election. Mm. And I think the reason for that was people were comparing Bersatu to UMNO. And UMNO was contesting, I think, I don't know, maybe 140 or something like that at that time. And it showed that UMNO was serious about wanting to govern, to become government. Mm. When you're only contesting 52, even if you win all of those seats, you still don't have the majority. And you have to be basically in a coalition, and as we were in PH. So in our case this time, we need to show and convince to the rakyat, that we are serious, that we want to contest as many seats as we can.
Okay.
But getting to your next point, we must be working with someone else.
Yeah, and 120 seats means that you'll be going head-to-head against what was your initial coalition partner in 2018, PH.
I would think, first of all, we are targeting rural Malay seats.
Okay.
And then there will be the semi-urban. You're correct. There will be some overlap.
Yes.
So this one, we have to see how we can work on those seats. And I would admit that there may be instances or places where we would be vying for the same seats that PH is interested in.
So who is your coalition partner? Is it PH because you can't compete in the same seats? Or are you looking at maybe becoming a third force with Warisan and Muda, for example?
Yes, we are very close to Warisan and Muda, surely. When I say 120 seats, that means there's 102 more seats that we won't be contesting. It would be a waste for us if we didn't do something about those seats. So the way we have to do it is to be in some form of electoral pact or coalition. We haven't decided which way to go yet, with others who are going after those urban seats. So because after all, the government that needs to be formed will still be multiracial, but we hope Pejuang will be at the helm. We need to be working with others as well. I believe that the political scenario has changed somewhat. People are not looking really at political parties, but they're looking at candidates. There may be an opportunity or chances for even NGOs that have been very active in certain constituencies to put forward their own candidates under whatever banner. And I think we can work with them also.
But so, are you going to definitely not work with Pakatan Harapan?
I'm not discounting that possibility. So we are still open to discussions, but we have certain issues about the Malay electorate, how they feel about PH.
Do you have any issues with Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim being Prime Minister?
I think his time has passed. That's my feeling. And I think a lot of people have been saying that. In fact, within PH themselves, it's time for a new set of people to take over.
And this has nothing to do with your father's supposed long-standing animosity with him.
Well, despite that so-called animosity, he was very willing to hand over the reins of government to Dato' Sri Anwar. Unfortunately, all those things happened, as you know.
Was he? Because people said that the timeline kept being pushed later and later, though.
No, the timeline was, the way agreed. I saw it, was up to APEC. Mm. So that was just 6 months after Sheraton move, unfortunately, that it happened. Yeah.
And personally, Dato' Sri, what are your ambitions? Do you hope to be Prime Minister one day?
I think it's not going to be so easy to have such an ambition. All kinds of things need to fall in place. The stars have to be aligned before that could happen for anyone. I don't think the present prime minister expected to become prime minister himself, you know, but
exactly that point.
I must say that I never held that kind of ambition, but I must be ready for any kind of possibilities. So
you don't discount that then?
I won't discount that, but this is subject to all kinds of things. Like you have to know, we have to win, we have to have the numbers, we have to form a coalition government, and of course the rakyat has a lot of say in all this.
On that note, thank you for your time. On The Breakfast Grill this morning was Datuk Sri Mukris Mahathir. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.